Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble Mailbag. It's Saturday, 2nd of December. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Vidushan Ahantharaja.
Welcome, one and all. It's good to have you with us. It's Saturday.
Morning.
Oh, my goodness. It's Saturday. Fresh. Isn't it fresh, everybody? Bloody fresh. A reminder before we get stuck into your questions that if you want to get involved on the mailbag, you can tweet us on X at Football Ramble, message us on Instagram at Football Ramble, and of course, you can email us show@footballramble.com. It's very straightforward. We want to hear your questions. Thank you so much for everybody, to everybody who got involved, of course. Let's get straight to it then. Jim, you've got the first question.
I do, and it's from Jordan Beck. Now, Jordan says, with the Premier League being so known globally, is there a feeling from English fans that fans from other countries, air quotes, aren't true fans? I live in America and have been a Spurs fan for 15 years now. Never been to a match or seen the team in person, but feel just as connected as if I lived there.
Mm. Since I started watching Fulham just a few years ago, yeah, we all think they're not true fans.
It's a really interesting question. I think the reason it's so interesting is because this speaks to a really modern dilemma in football fandom generally, I think, because... And so we thank Jordan for sending the question in, of course, first and foremost. But the nature of fandom has changed unimaginably, say, since the Premier League started and became so successful. But I'd also argue...
You don't have to go back to the sort of 70s and 80s.
No. But I would also argue that it's changed since we've started doing this show.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
15 years or so. And the reason for that, I think, is because of the access to information and entertainment and games and goals and all the rest of it related to clubs. So the biggest change that's affected the ability for people in other countries to support a team is the available access to effectively information about that team. And I'm not saying that's my answer, but I'm just trying to further framing it as to why this now comes up. Because I go to the US quite a lot, and I detect that when they speak to me about football without even knowing anything about the round, which is like, you're English, so you'll like football, and they start talking, there's almost like a a natural like deferment to me and my experience and my knowledge because I'm British than they have. And what tends to happen is sometimes, usually keeping it to myself because it's embarrassing, they know quite a lot more than I do and take it quite a lot more seriously than a lot of football fans you'll find in this country. So the question is what makes it valid and what, on the other side of it, invalidates it. And we, I think, need to update generally our attitude towards that to international fans. And that's before we even take into account people in the Far East, people in Africa, all the other places that perhaps we don't know as well.
It's interesting you say that because you've used America as the example, and that's
well, the guy's American.
The guy's American, so that makes sense. I can actually, when you talk about the fandom sort of having changed and so on, I went to Kenya in 2009. Now, that is before a lot of the social media stuff that we see nowadays, like really before everyone or a lot of people around the world have smartphones and so on and so forth. And when I went there, the previous Champions League final, if I've got my years correct, was Manchester United versus Chelsea in Moscow. Manchester United winning on penalties, the John Terry slip, the Anelka penalty save, etc. And I was talking football with a number of the Kenyans because they all love the Premier League. You know, it's such a huge thing. And one of the guys was saying to me, oh, he said, when Manchester United won that Champions League final, he said, you would think the Kenyan national team had just done something incredible.
Right.
People were out in the streets celebrating. And I found that remarkable.
Yeah.
It really hit me around the chops just how big the Premier League is. As I say, this is way before at the internet as we know it now. Of course, the internet was there, but this is like way before like so many people got access. I can't stress that enough. And I thought, this is extraordinary. I'd been to Ghana a couple of years before as well, and that was during the Africa Cup of Nations. And I'd realised how big the Premier League was. I remember... We were involved in a number of sort of projects, and we went to a school and you play with the kids and so on. And I was saying, "Oh, who are your favourite players?" And none of them would say the African players playing in the Premier League, like Essien and Drogba and so on. And little girl said Peter Crouch was her favourite player. I thought that was great. And you saw some of the kids, and you realised this. And of course, you know that's what they watched. But when I went to Kenya with that experience, that Manchester United are supported that much.
Yeah.
How on earth can you say to those Kenyans, yeah, but you're not true fans, are you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But the question is there a sentiment from English fans that fans from other countries aren't true fans? Well, yes, 100%. Like without
particularly towards Americans, I would say.
But Indian Premier League fans, like sort of South Asian Premier League fans, even little things like my dad is a big Liverpool supporter, but he you know, whenever people talk about that, I'm like, oh, you know, he used to listen to them on the radio in Sri Lanka. And I was like, oh, yeah, because they were doing really well. And even little things like that, it gets kind of cut away bit by bit. But yeah, no, without doubt, like people look down on overseas fans of Premier League teams, despite the fact that it's marketed in a certain way and that clearly it's such an entertaining product that, like, why wouldn't you get into it? Especially for the reasons you've just put across there about African players, people who look like you or represent your country playing in that league. It's a very, very exciting thing. And I think football globally has that appeal that we don't really see over here because it's such a big deal over here. So like, you know, even just riffing off your example there in Kenya, Bangladesh was completely shut down when Argentina won the World Cup because everyone in Bangladesh is huge Argentina fans. Mm. You grow up in Bangladesh as a fan of the Argentinian football team.
Huh.
It's huge.
I didn't know that.
Predate Messi's
It's Maradona.
Started. Right. So since then they've stayed with the national team. Yeah, that's
like to the extent that there's like an anti-Brazilian sentiment as well.
That is amazing.
Yeah, but that's just the nature of football, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I also think there's a lot of the ill feeling to overseas fans is often made worse by the way clubs operate in particular. Like if you think about the globalization of the Premier League itself and the way it tries to pander to other markets, whether it's by changing kickoff times or, you know, overseas tours and stuff like that. This idea of the 39th game is to basically access that new market and squeeze as much money as possible.
A lot of the top Premier League clubs' commercial decisions now are basically international audience first, right?
Yeah.
Which is basically what you're saying.
Well, it's a huge marketplace that they're competing in, right?
So that's kind of an interesting...
Because you end up basically pitting your, like, quote-unquote traditional fans, i.e. the fans who go to games, as it were, against that global fan base. Yeah.
Well, this is a big, big part of the issue, isn't it? And this is where it stems from. And it, this, to me, the issue, to go back to what you were talking about, Luke, comes from how much football fandom has changed. And if you go right back to it, the team nearest to you was full of players who probably mostly lived near you, were just a group of blokes from where you were from, so you would naturally support them. Mm-hmm. That has changed massively, massively over time. We're now at a point where the people watching the game in the stadium are in a minority, like in a huge, huge minority in terms of the people watching the game and supporting that team. And it's just so far removed from that idea now that any team represents the place you live in, even in terms of the personnel on the pitch, even if you live a stone's throw from the stadium, that it's a bit of an abstract idea now that that locality means authenticity in some way, I think.
But the locality issue has always been, the locality issue actually applies to this country as well. You know, I always found it, and I think we do need to update how we assess that kind of stuff. I don't actually think it really matters beyond Jordan, the question asker. His own personal relationship with Spurs is his business, really. I mean, you're probably asking out of interest more than the fact that he cares what we think, necessarily. But it should be his relationship with the team should be how he sees it, and that should be fine for him, and he only really needs to satisfy himself. But in this country, there'll be people, I remember growing up, there'll be people who support, say, Manchester United and would really get involved with the Manchester United-Liverpool rivalry that they know nothing about. Yeah. They know as little about that as an American fan would, because they've never, a lot of them never even been to that part of the country.
Well, it's the sort of the tribal thing. This is what we do. I mean, I suppose, you know, talking about my experiences in Africa and whatnot, that made me realise that the Premier League was hugely supported. And I think that when we say, because I think we've been a bit damning on English fans and saying, well, a lot of them do it. And you're right. I think that there is that feeling. And that can be, you know, like at Stamford Bridge, for example. I know that some Chelsea fans moan that there's a lot of tourism there, and it can
same thing happening in Man City at the moment.
Yeah, it happens at Spurs. As well.
It's happening at Arsenal at the moment as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. But one of the things I recall, and it's a funny example to use, but I think this is where it kind of started for me in my mind. There was a Guinness advert in the late night. I think it was about 1997, and it was reading off a lot of stats, and it starts, you know, the average cow passes enough wind in a week to inflate a hot air balloon, you know. 88% of clones never fall in love, and all these sort of stats. And there was one where they show scenes or footage of people in, I think it's India, certainly in South Asia, and 98% of Manchester United fans have never been to Old Trafford. And a lot of people, and a lot of people went, "Oh, I believe that one," because then a thing comes up. I think it's a Vic Reeves quote. 88.2% of statistics are made up on the spot. It's quite a famous advert. A lot of the Guinness adverts were.
I remember
back then, and a lot of people who weren't Manchester United fans started going, "Oh, yeah, but I leave that one about Manchester United," and it was a bit of a stick to beat them with, and
because they're successful.
Well, because they were successful. But of course, if you're successful, people start supporting you. Oh, you're from Surrey, are you? Oh, well, you probably support Manchester United. There was all that kind of thing. So it was always a bit of a stick to beat people with. As time has progressed, as I say, there are some examples over the years where some people go, "Bloody hell, these people are really, really into it." Some people will then accept that, depending, as I say, on how broad your horizons are, and other people will dismiss it, ignore it, and moan about it. And I think that is it. You know, it's that's with the situation in England. So you're absolutely right to say that. Yeah, some English fans or people are very disparaging and just, "Oh, this is a load of nonsense." But I don't think it causes any tension in stadiums.
But not inside a stadium, I wouldn't say.
No, but with relating to stadiums, I think it's something that is coming up more and more now. I'm forgetting his name, but the Newcastle owner
The previous one?
No, the current Newcastle owner.
The Piss Posse.
So, you know, a member of the Piss Posse.
Piss Posse, you can call them that.
Yeah, call them that.
A member of the Piss Posse came out, you know, tweeted saying that they need better atmosphere in the ground and stuff like that. You need to back our team the way that they're backing you, this, that, and the
other. Did he finish by going, "Way, lads"?
Well, one of the first replies on that, one of the most liked when I last looked, was saying, "Oh, I saw loads of tourists in today." That's really the atmosphere.
And I think there's an idea to drill down into the kind of the thing Marcus was saying. And I think I'd also like to say to Jordan that, like, really the only thing that matters is your relationship with the club you support and how you choose to, you know, carry that out. If you don't feel like you ever want to go to a game, or you don't want to travel 3,500 miles or whatever it is, and you can't afford to do this, that shouldn't diminish your capacity as a fan, because being a fan of a football team is really about how you feel, and that's really your business. But the question itself about the aren't true fans thing, just to expand a bit on what Marcus was saying, is that we have to understand that the way football's gone, this kind of rapacious greed towards, you know, understand they've got a really marketable, valuable product and they want to make as much money as they can out of it. And we talk about, quote unquote, the Premier League. Well, the Premier League really is only the 20 owners of the clubs who are making these decisions, and they need a certain amount of them to make these decisions to go a certain way. And sometimes it gets kiboshed, like the Super League or whatever, by fans. But generally speaking, that's how it goes. You know, there is a feeling among fans, say, and they're called legacy fans in quite a disparaging way, but there's certainly a feeling that this type of stuff almost takes the club away from those fans. Mm-hmm. Like they feel like almost a geographical shift to somewhere new, a whole new territory.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, obviously, not literally, but metaphorically speaking. And it actually happened quite noticeably when the team I support were in the Premier League. Like when there were a lot of Portsmouth fans, obviously terrified about what was going to happen to the club because of the financial issues they were in. But there was a lot of Portsmouth fans who were relieved that they were no longer in the Premier League. The prices come down a bit. They get a little bit more access to their players. Mm-hmm. They feel more related to them. There's a kind of understanding around the working class environment that Portsmouth is, that, you know, now they're back being shit again and our lives are a bit shit, but this is fun. You know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And all this stuff of international fans getting involved, and not just the international fans getting involved, which of course is absolutely fine, but then the decision makers in the game pandering to those fans rather than their own fans because they can make more money because there's more of them, only serves to foster resentment amongst local fans.
Yeah, and totally. Yeah. And this is, the more successful you are, the more you gain in a lot of ways, but you do lose something. You know, it's like your favourite band. I used to watch this lot when it was 200 of us in a small ceiling club. Oh, now look at us, we're in a stadium. But how many albums have you bought?
Well, it's a similar thing. That there's a lot of gatekeeping with it, right?
And
it's absolutely comparable to music in particular because fandom of anything, but with football in particular, it's like a vampire bite. You know, once you support your team, you can't help it. You don't have a choice in it.
Well, it's hell, just, everything's dark.
It's absolutely hellish. Yeah?
Yeah,
everything burns. It's horrible. Nothing's got any taste anymore.
All your kickoffs at night time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
On Christmas Day.
But it is, isn't it? Even if you live, on a different continent. If you, I imagine, Jordan, the fact that you're asking this question at all means that you are passionately into Spurs and their trials and tribulations, and that you probably get up at all hours to watch
Fans in Australia have to do that.
Very, very different type of fandom, but it's no less authentic. And I think that's what's at the essence of this question, isn't it? It's the authenticity of fandom. And obviously it's different if you live around the corner and you're in the stadium, because there is something to be said about the 12th man. It genuinely makes a difference. If you are there shouting, it does help.
But I remember not that long ago, I remember possibly before we started doing this show, maybe bleeding into it, and to a certain extent now, when I was growing up watching football, and if a game was on telly and you talked about it, if someone was in the conversation who was at the game, their word was kind of gospel.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but I was at the game, so I saw it.
Yeah, you're right.
So much analysis that I think that's what I mean when I say we have to kind of update what we talk about. Yeah. We talk about people being quote-unquote proper fans, because there's so many different ways to consume it now.
Might I suggest, though, and I've only been to Anfield, I think, the once, I, from the outside looking at, I could be totally wrong, so forgive me if there is a problem, but Liverpool seem to do this quite well.
I think part of that comes from the buy-in to when you go into Anfield is that you sing.
Well, I think you know what to do.
Exactly.
I
actually think it's the same in Manchester United as well.
Yeah, to a point.
I do honestly think, I know people who have almost felt like they've gone to Manchester United for the first time. And Liverpool. I do actually physically know a couple of Liverpool fans with the same experience, where you're almost preparing yourself for what's expected of you when you go.
Yeah,
it may not be the case now, but I'm talking maybe 10 years ago.
You've got to join in with the opening number, which is really powerful, right?
But you kind of know what to do. Like, there is a culture there which you can attach yourself to and you go, oh, I feel...
But people shouldn't... You know. But that's fine, but people shouldn't... I don't think these days, particularly, people should be able to say to someone like Jordan, who for 15 years has, you know, done whatever he's done and had this relationship with the club that he's got, but that doesn't make you a proper fan.
No, of course,
they have the right to say that.
But Vish, we talked about that earlier, it's nonsense.
One of the cool things that I get to do from going back to the US for Christmas every year is whenever there's, you know, a decent game on that I want to watch, I'll look up either in New York or Philadelphia that fan group, and you always find it.
And they create their own. They've created their own culture, which is one out of necessity due to the geography of where they are. The bars that you go into in New York City to watch certain big clubs, have their own culture and their own kind of history and the way they do things. And that's a good thing. That's a great thing.
Mm, but they're not welcome at the grounds because they're tourists. Next email, Vish.
Well, I do think, just to sign off, I do think we should say that, like, the more people like Jordan, the better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we don't know Jordan. He might be a dickhead.
Yeah, true enough, Vish. I was going to say, you shouldn't...
He can't be, though, because he's emailed into the Football Ramble.
He's a good guy, though, isn't he?
Sorry, Jordan, I take that back. I did not mean it. I've got an email from Goofy Goober. if you're in charge of the Premier League, what is the first rule change that you would implement?
Local tickets for local people.
You've got to prove your local.
You've got to turn up with two utility bills.
Jim does it. Jim does, a copy of a photo of you holding a newspaper from the 80s.
Yeah.
Jim doesn't feel like a rivalry with Jordan because Jordan's not a proper Spurs fan.
Well,
can I answer the question?
Yeah.
Very, very quick. I've got a semi-serious answer.
Well, as you should.
What I'd like to see happen is an extension of what friend of the Ramble, Jonathan Wilson, has said in the past.
Yes.
And he's made this point, and I can't remember exactly where he made it. It might have been in one of his very, very long articles about the nature of transfers in football, about how it used to be when transfers were first introduced, you used them as a way to kind of cover a gap you needed or to bring a player in that you particularly really wanted and all the rest of it. And it was a supplementary thing to the club.
Yeah.
And now, of course... teams go out and buy players all the time. Mm-hmm. Even even a team in League One, like the team I support, there's a massive turnover of players. Yeah. Like it's not, and a certain reason for that is to do with ECCC, which I've got to get into now. But what I would like to see actually, and you'd never be able to do it, but it's a restriction of trade. And there's probably loads of laws that would be broken if you did it. But on the other hand, the guy asking the question is called Goofy Goober, so I don't think I need to answer it that seriously. I would impose some kind of limit on transfers you could do. So I think what I would say is you get X amount per season and the rest you've really got to foster...
Academy
your,
players and
Yeah, you've got to foster your own
Do you not
players.
Think that... I understand the point of that, but does that not just lock in the whole situation? Look at the Man City Academy. They've got their players...
They have, but they've only been able to do that because of ECCC.
Yeah.
I would get rid of that.
Well, yeah.
So the point... The reason that ECCC, I said I wasn't going to get into it, but I will.
Right.
ECCC is so disastrous for football because what it's removed by holding those clubs outside the Premier League to ransom over money they need, because the football pyramid is so top heavy that they rely upon that money from the Premier League, is it said to them, it does not matter how well you foster young players in the geographical area where your club is situated, we will fucking take them and you can't stop us.
Mm.
So the reason Man City are in that position, it does lock it in. You're right to say that. Mm. But the only reason it does lock it in is because Man City's academy hasn't just been finding players from two or three streets around fucking Etihad.
Yeah,
they've been taking them from everywhere.
Yeah.
And before they weren't allowed to do that. It had to be within 90 minutes of the club. So I would get rid of all that. I would limit the amount of transfers and I would start to... encourage the idea that the fairness of competition means that if you work really hard in your local area and bring players through from there and start to, you know, really kind of position your club as a team that can generate players through and sustain themselves by that and keep the players that you want and sell the players on that you've developed as a profit, the whole football pyramid would be a lot more equal.
Yeah. Anybody else?
So I've got a few suggestions.
Are these going to be undermining what I've just said?
No, very, very different. So the biggest one for me that I'm finding increasingly frustrating...
If you're not singing, get out.
...as time goes on. If you're not singing, get out.
Jim never sings.
When you get out... No, that's true, I don't. I'm just not a singy bloke.
Yeah.
Offside, essentially. I would tweak the offside rule. Now, I'm not confident that this would change... this would actually make things better. It might make things worse in a slightly different way or equally bad in a different way. But I do think the idea of the daylight rule should at least be explored, because if you look at the Spurs-Villa game at the weekend, I think there were four disallowed goals in that game.
Son got three of them.
Yeah, Son got three. Villa got one as well.
There was a lot.
Forget who. There was a lot. A few of them were, at least one of them was like definitely offside. A couple of them were so marginal that I don't think the attacker gained any advantage whatsoever. In terms of sporting merit of what is happening on the field, we lose so many goals to essentially what is a quirk of admin because the rule has to stop somewhere. It would change the game significantly. If you've got a head start on a defender, you're probably, you know, heavily favourited to score that goal.
But we want goals, right? That's it's the best part of the game. That goal would have been that game would have been a banger. It would have been just goal after goal after goal, and it could very easily be like that.
Yeah, if more any often, of the attacker's body is in line with the defender, then they're onside.
Yes, that's what I would say.
Not technically a Premier League decision, Jim, to have that law. So well, if you're in charge of the PL, you'd have no power over that whatsoever.
Well, I'm making a breakaway league. Okay, that's my decision. I'm breaking away from everyone else with Goofy Goober.
Okay.
I'm getting rid of indirect free kicks as well because they're boring and they're pointless.
Yep.
What's the point of not being able to shoot? You should be able to do what you want.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Teo has said, what's the best stadium atmosphere any of you have ever experienced live? And I think I'm going to come to Vish first because he didn't answer the last question. So
yeah,
Vish,
he sapped off, didn't
he? Yeah, he didn't fancy it. Didn't have the bollocks. What's the best stadium atmosphere you've ever experienced live, Vish?
I'm really having to split this with... Because actually, it's a cricket match.
We're not having that.
We'll just save that for when you do some cricket content and stick to football, you maniac. Oh, mine's fucking Phil Collins at the O2. Who gives a fuck?
You've just taken Marcus.
Stephen Gerrard over here.
Let's go to Marcus first.
Well, one we were at recently. You have to say, Newcastle when they beat PSG 4-1.
That made my top three list.
It was incredible. And another one that you and I were both at as well was England versus Denmark
in the Euro semi-final.
You know, it was extraordinary. The Newcastle one was just, it was pumping. It was like the whole city was there. And you know, we talk about local football and international football. It felt like everyone, other than us, we were the tourists, in that stadium were Geordies. Do you know what I mean? It was quite something. And the England-Denmark semi-final was incredible because to go to Wembley for an actual game of that magnitude was quite... So usually you go to qualifiers or friendlies. And nowadays in qualifiers, there's not a huge amount of jeopardy. There's not... England are expected to win.
Even if there is, it's still a qualifier.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, it's not the expectation because
compare that to the final, where obviously it kind of kicked off. The final people were nervy. The semi-final, it was like, I think we're going to win this. And also, lockdown as well. There was a celebratory atmosphere. We were all like that. It was something
else. Agree.
Yeah. So my answer is a week before that, mm-hmm. I think.
Might be 2 weeks if you're going to mention Scotland.
England, Germany.
Ooh,
yeah.
That was the best atmosphere. Wow. I've been at.
What
that
a great thing to witness as well.
Yeah.
Were you in the press box?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay.
And the stadium was less full than the semi-final, officially.
Yeah, yeah. But
they'd open up a little bit.
But it was that great thing of, and only in hindsight because England ended up winning. But you know when you go to a ground and there's that 10 minutes before kickoff where you can feel everyone's nervous.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think there's something to be said for that. I know it isn't always conducive to a good atmosphere.
Sure.
But just the wave of emotion all the way through. I still remember, I feel like we referenced this from that game more than anything during the Euros. It's Sterling giving the ball away and Muller running through.
Yeah.
Just that entire sequence felt
hands
like...
Hands on his head.
But the entire sequence felt so long. Because I suppose how much ground that had to be made up.
Yeah.
And it was almost like the gasp rippled through the stadium. Mm. Like as soon as Muller made, 10 yards, it would move on 10 yards.
Yeah.
And then the release when he missed was out of this world.
It was crazy.
And that was the first time all the anxiety went away.
Yeah.
Because it was like,
it's our day.
If he's not going to score that, we've got
And that's, I think what you're talking about there, because my three were the two aforementioned games, the Denmark game, which I was behind the goal for, which is incredible. The Newcastle game, which I think a lot of people in hindsight kind of misunderstood, because that game itself wasn't about... There was a lot of eye-rolling about Newcastle beating PSG 4-1 in that game itself, but people were kind of being a bit, oh yeah, well, now they've got loads of money, that is, everyone's just fucking on board with them because they're in the Champions League. And it wasn't that. What we were actually experiencing, because we were there, was this is the first home Champions League game Newcastle have had in 20-something years.
Yeah.
This is a massive... occasion for the city, who was crazy about football, and what we're talking about, because the other one I had was when Portsmouth beat Southampton 1-0 at Fratton Park in 2004. That was the first time Portsmouth had beaten Southampton since 1988, and only the second time since the 60s. Obviously, Fratton Park has a good atmosphere anyway, or it certainly did then. What you're talking about there is the ingredients you need. When you guys talked about all the atmospheres, it tends to be not just a game.
Yes.
It tends to be the atmosphere has to be expectation beforehand.
It's the occasion.
The right ingredients. Right. Because if you go to a game when it turns out to be an amazing game, yes, you can have a great atmosphere, but that's really only for like the last half an hour.
Yeah.
You're talking about something where you've got a build-up of a long time, an amazing game that actually delivers, and then the celebration afterwards.
Yeah.
The reason I maintain the atmosphere was probably better at the semi-final in the Euros for England against Denmark than it was going into the final.
Mm-hmm.
It's because after the game against Denmark, you still have something to look forward to.
Yeah.
There's an incredible amount of expectation of what's coming next.
Yeah.
But of course, you wouldn't have had that at all with the final,
which
regardless
is just as well
of the result.
We didn't win it.
Well, yeah, exactly.
It would have been a letdown.
We're still celebrating now.
But you're right, though, because if you're going to say, well, what then developed into a great atmosphere, incredibly, Craven Cottage, when Fulham beat Juventus 4-1.
I mean, that must have been unreal.
Well, it was just people didn't know what to do with themselves. You know?
So there's a few, obviously, I've considered, as we all have. Marcus, you were present for two of them, actually.
Mm.
One would have been the 2009 Champions League final in Rome at the Stadio Olimpico that you and I went to. And part of that was actually the context of the day where we went out that morning.
Yeah. Flew out
that morning, obviously. We didn't run.
it was
surely you didn't.
No. We did later, though, because we nearly missed the bus home. But the whole city was alive with Barcelona fans, really. They were so loud, they were everywhere. The Man United fans were a little bit less loud out and about, but then when we got into the stadium, they sort of gave as good as they got there. And the atmosphere lasted a day in one of the finest cities on earth, which was a really, really important thing about it. But it was so loud, and it felt like a huge, huge occasion. It felt like and there was also a sense, I think even from some of the Man United fans, that we're watching one of the greatest teams in history here as well.
Barcelona knew that it was their time.
Absolutely. Sort of. I think the Champions League win a couple of seasons later was perhaps the crowning point of Pep's Barcelona, but that was fantastic as well. So there's probably some recency bias in here as well, but in terms of like an actual physical experience at a ground, it's happened in the Man City game this season as well, but last season, the game at the Emirates where Arsenal beat Bournemouth with like the last kick of the game, I basically semi-fainted with adrenaline. Like I had to like steady myself. I couldn't join in with the celebrations because my entire body was overcome with adrenaline. And that's something, that is a very rare
experience. And as you say, because the things are still in play, and that result means that there's still something to hope for as well. And can I just say as well, the Bernabeu, we all saw a game there, and the atmosphere was good. It was fine. It certainly isn't in this conversation, but there is that feeling when you walk in there, you're like, I want to play for Real Madrid.
There's
get why the players are like that about
them. The pomp and ceremony to begin that Madrid derby was something. The atmosphere then kind of...
But there's the ghosts that haunt that stadium. That's the thing.
It's a certain amount
of this stuff with that
a lot of moaning and groaning.
Yeah, but I just think when you're really walking into that, you know, regardless of what you think of Real Madrid and their checkered past, when you're walking into a stadium or any stadium with that amount of history, it does mean something. Like you can feel it, and that's part of the attraction of it.
Yeah, I do.
But
agree.
I mean, it's no home game against Bournemouth. I agree. No. But I mean,
gentlemen, we were going to have a very positive refereeing story from Norway, but I think we need to give people their Saturday mornings back.
Yeah, we'll do it next time. We'll get to it next time.
Live and Kicking's about to start.
Or going live, as I still call it.
So
thank you so much for everybody for getting involved in the mailbag. We really, really appreciate it, and thanks for listening. Of course, we will be back with another one of these in 2 weeks' time. So do get in touch. Remember to tweet us on X at Football Ramble, message us on Instagram at Football Ramble, and of course email us show@footballramble.com. join us on Monday, and don't forget to subscribe on your podcast app. Have a lovely weekend. Thank you, Luke.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vish.
Thank you.
And thank you once again.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.